Steve this. We've had a bunch of our crew up there for the last month, just trying to clear that whole canal in case we get another big snow, hopefully, like last year. We've been really focusing hard on it. We normally don't get this much time up there, but weather hasn't started, so they're still up there just hitting it hard. As soon as it starts turning weather, they'll all come down here and work. I think that's about it.
If I could add just on the PSPS generator, acquiring generators to that. It actually was a really good example of how coordination happens during an emergency situation. So I'm on the chain of communications with OES, the Eldorado County OES, and EID's on that list too. And so that's what we do when we need something. We just let them all know through that list, hey, partners, we need help. And that's all I did. I said, look, hey, we could easily use this generator, and here's what we're looking for specs-wise. In our case, it wasn't like a health and life safety issue that was immediate emergency, but it was important. So I let them know, and response was fairly rapid from OES, like, hey, yeah, we'll put it out on the statewide list, and we'll find one somewhere for you in the state. And then before they could even take the first step on that, the ops manager at EID, Dan Corcoran, just emailed me or called me. He's like, actually, Steve, if we got a couple you can come get right now. And so that's how the whole ball worked. So it was really, worked really well. It was really quick from the point that I initially said, oh, we could use something if you got it, because these people have been out without water for 3 days already. And at that point, we were thinking it was going to go 5 to 6 to 7, It was looking pretty bad. So that's all. That's all I had, sorry.
It's all right.
Well, that is. I was in the office during that time, and it was nicely set up for Halloween, so the generated lights and wires made it. I could have had extra revenue for a haunted house.
Yeah. Daryl, can you elaborate on the installation of the new tank?
What would you like me to elaborate? We put a new tank in. It's a 3,000-gallon tank. It's considered a storage tank. It's at the top. It's because our pump stations, most of them run off of pressure. So there's a pressure switch that when, as people use water, pressure drops, they turn on. This one just fills a storage tank. There's a float inside the tank. Okay. I'm not sure.
Was this tank slated to be replaced?
Was it slated? We've been talking about replacing it for years and years and years. My state inspector that comes out, now I have a new one, but we weren't required to do it. We just wanted to do it. It needed to be done. There was a tank was up there. It was only about 700 gallons. It couldn't. Sometimes it would go a little too low, and some customers would have low pressure or no water sometimes. So we made the decision to put in a 3,000 gallon tank.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
It was like $1,300 for the tank.
Okay. Thank you.
Having a good friend on Black Ridge, I appreciate you guys doing that. So, yeah, there's many calls. Okay. Anyone else on Daryl's part? Adam?
Yeah. So I think the theme you guys were just talking about was a generator. That's the main thing we were under too, with Station 16, is keeping that system going during the power outage, make sure we didn't have any overflows from our sanitary sewer system. Other than that, inspection-wise, flow-wise, everything was pretty normal. This time of year, lower escrows, they're just kind of go down towards into the summer here. So nothing really out of the ordinary besides the power outage to report.
Okay. Any questions? Hold on, just a second. Anyone on the board? Any questions on this?
No.
Garcia, anything? No. Okay. Steve?
What size generator are we talking about getting, and does it have wheels? So
Station 16 does have a generator. Has a dedicated generator for the sanitary sewer. So that one actually is on it, but it's stationary. It sits there with automatic transfer switch, so the power goes out, it gets on. You don't have any waste to overflow.
The one for around here. You want one for here too, but in case you have an emergency somewhere, you want to go tow it someplace, don't you?
Yeah, it's definitely an option. Yeah.
What size?
We'd need a minimum of 220,000 watt, and then a big one for that three-phase motor. I forget what it was, 30 kVA or something.
Big ones.
Yeah.
And once the pump stations are big,
Thank you. Let's move on to item 6D. George, ALT plant update.
Away here. We're not going to do that today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, our prime photographer is busy on some other assignments. We didn't take any photos during this month. I didn't feel that they were really necessary because status of the project, we had already had the open house and everything. I think both the board and many members of the public are pretty familiar with what the site looks like. So what I'd like to do today is just limit my presentation to the actual board items that I've got here, and I was just going to go down them a paragraph at a time, and if you'd like to stop me on anything, please do so. I'd like to start out with the introduction. We're talking about the project being 99.8% complete. I've had some questions in the past. What does that mean? The remaining work activities I have, there's some electrical. We're still lacking the load bank training, some extra parts, which consists of lights, fuses, things like that. So that's about $22,500, and I've got $1,000 residual left on the office furniture. The way the office furniture was set up, staff was able to identify the desks, chairs that they needed, some of the computer monitors, things like that, so we still have a little bit of a residual amount of money in there. So actual contract items, we've got about $23,500 remaining. That's how you get to that last final 0.2%. When it comes to the consultants, Myers and Sons is still on the job doing work on the punch list stuff. I'll go over that in a minute. We've also pretty well depleted our contract with NextGen and Somas. I've still got some residual money if I've got questions relating to support that I need on that. Construction activities over the past month. The biggest thing they did, they installed the pumps and the metering devices on the filter to waste tank. Landscaping, it was primarily punch list items. They added some additional mulch. We actually went around the propane tank, pulled all the mulch away from that. We've got aggregate base around that now. I think it's a lot safer based on comments we received, which were really good. They did some additional anchoring of the irrigation system. All the little emitters have little anchors on them. They were lacking some of those, and then I'd say they probably replaced about five of the individual plants. We didn't have a lot of loss of the plants. Now, there is a guarantee that I'll be monitoring on that, or the district will be monitoring for the plants. The painting was limited primarily to touch-up painting in the filter building. Okay, getting back to the last item on that page, I've got punch list items. I've had questions in the past about what might the punch list consist of. I've got about 150 page of spec items that were identified by NextGen that I'm going over with a contractor. But just to give you a general idea, I'm still waiting for the record as-built drawings. I've got spare parts that I need, and the contractor's aware of this. He's assembling these. I need extra box, all the sprinkler heads. We've got pump shafts, seals, and filters. Belts, special tools, switches, gaskets, O-rings. That just gives you a general idea what that's about. In the specs, they're talking on that as-built topo survey. I'm waiting for that from the contractor. I've got training videos that I need to collect from the contractor as it relates to operation of the different equipment. I've got some load bank training that I'm waiting from the electrician. I've got all the warranties I need to collect. A couple examples of a warranty. The building's got a 20-year weather tightness warranty. We've got like 5-year warranties on tanks and things of that nature. Some additional signage and just things like that. Those are basically what I'm talking about on the punch list. I certainly haven't identified every one of them, but I think it gives both the board and the general public an idea of what I'm looking at out there for the punch list. Going to the next page, the budget, again, that's just a summary of progress payments primarily that I processed with a contractor. We've expended $10,430,000. When I use the term expended, that doesn't include the retention money, but this is what we've actually expended on the job. We're still retaining 5% of that money. Construction engineering, that number increased a little bit. That's primarily NextGen. I have some time on that. And then miscellaneous support, district staff. Right now at this stage, that would primarily go up just a little bit for some time that Gloria assisted me with. Going to the next item, SRF payment request. That's just a mathematical thing, a summary of the monies that we've received to date, SRF payments. So the total that we've received under the SRF loan is $9,471,000. We've got some pending requests in with the state. They're summarized on the next page. They amount to about $222,000. We've got an additional request we'll be putting in probably later this week. Going down to the contract change orders, processed $204,016 on those right now. I'm currently back on change order number 7. That's about $13,000, so I'll be working on the processing of that. I've got some other change orders, 12. If you recall, the board authorized the general manager additional change order authority, so I'll be working on change order number 12. I've got that all summarized. That's about a $39,000 change order. A lot of that work were modifications to the backwash water tank. We've got changes in the decanter hose, the piping down there, the bridge that goes across the top. We've got additional cover plates on the backwash water up in the filter building. So that's pretty much a summary of change order 12. That's where we're at with those. 12 isn't processed yet. Future change orders. I tried to summarize what that work would consist of in the next paragraph. And then the final paragraph that I have here talks about a claim that was filed by Myers and the resolution of that claim. It's pretty well summarized, I believe, in the paragraph. I'd be more than happy to go over any element of that, but with assistance of the general manager and counsel if necessary. What I've tried to do is I've identified the amount of that claim, which was reported out of closed session, and it was attributed to delays. And I've attempted to estimate where the funding for that additional $400,000 would be. I estimate that we're going to have about $300,000 in residual funding under the existing budget, and I've identified an additional $100,000 that would likely come out of the capital reserves.
Okay. Questions? Thank you, George. Questions from the board? Any others? Okay. Any public comment? Sherry?
So you're talking $400,000 over budget for Myers?
No, it's a claim for $400,000 that would be processed under a change order, but all of that wouldn't be over budget. Some of that would be taken out of the total project budget.
It going to be over budget?
It will be over budget.
That's
identified in that paragraph, I believe, around $100,000.
Oh, okay.
It's hard to get an exacting number right now because I'm still working in the change order world.
Right. Okay.
Anything left over would certainly, I'm sure, be dedicated to that.
Okay.
So.
Steve, George, what created the delays?
Well,
it's a combination of a variety of factors that created the delay. It was very disputed between the district and Myers what caused the delay. It was a big dispute, frankly.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Very good. Thank you, George.
Appreciate it.
Okay, item 6E, Finance Committee report. Steve?
Okay, at our last meeting, and hopefully you all got a copy of the draft minutes, we discussed cash balances report, the report regarding the beginning and ending of cash balances for fiscal years covering 2014 to 2019 was presented by Tom Crawford. A request was made by a committee member to also investigate the report and report the beginning and ending fiscal information for excess revenues or deficits. It was suggested that the district's audit reports would be the likely source of such information. Finance Committee member Walsh volunteered to explore the audits and report accordingly. We also reviewed draft leakage consideration policy. Mr. Palmer and Ms. Cross led a discussion of the alternative solutions to the issue revolving about the percentage of water rate charges that can be offset by the district when a customer incurs extraordinary water charges resulting from a leak in the customer's water delivery system. As a result of discussions regarding the subjectivity of the percentages that were examined, the committee entertained two motions. It was moved and seconded that the offset that a customer could receive after a leak, that the offset that a customer could receive after a leak is reported could not be greater than $1,000 and 70% of the amount that is equal to or less than $1,000. This motion was approved on the following votes. It was approved 4-0 with one abstention. The committee recommends that the board take into consideration the above approved motion when contemplating changes to the district's leakage consideration policy. And we also discussed at length the possibility of investment reports. Mitch McDonald put together that one. That was one of our let's go nose around when you guys don't give us anything to do. We'll go see what we can figure out that might help. And he's got a report for you. I will tell you that we had a motion, and the motion was to direct at the conclusion that Agent Saunders as the treasurer, or board member Saunders as the treasurer, be directed by the board to take a look at some of what you're going to hear from Mitch. So we've got a what, and that's what we recommended, and then we've got the why we recommended it. And I've asked Mitch to present it since he did all the work.
Okay, please.
Unlike the distinguished gentleman with the doctorate, the PhD, my PhD is a public high school diploma. So I'll just give it a shot and see what happens. Basically at the Finance Committee, we're just a bunch of nerds dealing with numbers, so we're just giving recommendations to the board, and you guys could consider and collaborate and see what works best for the best interest of the ratepayers in the district. So the what part of this, well, as a segue, coming into here, I listened to a lot of news talk, 30 years of it, and I just happened to be listening on during work today, and stock market was down because of some concern over the trade policies in China, and the president didn't give the right answers. But he did say part of the problem was is around the world, Japan, Europe, interest rates are negative, 0.25%. And we're still doing pretty good over here in the United States, which they're currently at about 1.5% to 1.75%. So we want some lower to be even more competitive. So that kind of leads in, we're trending down, but that kind of leads into the why part of the discussion. And the reason I do the why is because there's a lot of you that are familiar with finance and economics and numbers, and there's some that not so much. But in the absence of maybe me being available or some of the Finance Committee members to talk to when you consider this, this report, which I have here, will help you to decide if this is something that you want to consider with the data that I provided. So I'll just pretty much read this and answer questions. Feel free to stop me in midstream if you'd like. Following the district's reserve investment policy guidelines, the Finance Committee recommends the district act promptly, decisively, and without delay to take a proactive approach to seek, research, invest, and look into a higher investment rate of return available in the marketplace for the reserve investment funds. That's the what. This urgency is based on an unexpected change in Federal Reserve policy that switched from a more hawkish to a dovish stance, lowering short-term rates 3 times since spring. The FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, which is the policy-making arm of the Federal Reserve, cut the federal funds rate by 0.75% to 1.5% to 1.75%, just in the last 6 months. This equates to the district receiving in its current local agency investment fund, where most of the money is, about 7 of the 9 million currently in the reserves, $67,000 less in revenue next year versus this past year, down to $140,000 from $207,000 on approximately $9 million in total reserve assets right now. So if you haven't been keeping track, it's about almost just short of $250,000 last year went into the coffers. Indications are that the FOMC has just recently paused to evaluate the economic data before making any further near-term adjustments, facilitating an opportunity for the district to take this brief window to adjust its portfolio and lock in rates. Keep in mind that we are in the later stages of the longest economic expansion in history and long overdue for a change in the business cycle. When the stock market forecasts a recession, defined as two consecutive quarters of negative GDP, that's gross domestic product, it leads the economy downward 6 to 9 months prior to an official declaration. Concurrently, the bond market pushes long-term rates lower, and the Fed resumes lowering short-term rates back towards 0%, where they were between 2010 and 2017. The Fed action avoids an inverted yield curve and diminishes the negative consequences of a recession. Keep in mind that some of the largest economies in the world, this is where that segue was in I was telling you about, such as Japan and Europe, now have negative interest rates of 0.25% to 0.5%, and for everyone else benefit, for every $100 they invest, they'll get $99.50 to $99.75 back on their investment. So that's what's going on in the rest of the world. If interest rates return to where they were in 2017, the district will lose another $100,000 of annual revenue, drawing our income down further from $140,000 projected at the current rate to approximately $40,000. That's a total reduction of $167,000 annually. In light of this, I believe that the district should act quickly with a sense of urgency to lock in current medium and longer term rates in certificates of deposit, which is a substantial portion of reserve funds before interest rates head into the final downward leg. The primary objective of the administration of this portfolio of CDs would necessarily be safety and preservation of capital. A key priority is to optimize income through balancing tiered or laddered maturity dates of varying rates to achieve maximum overall rate of return while facilitating liquidity to cover all budgetary contingencies. A final objective is to guarantee as best as possible a minimum predictable investment income with the revenue earned to aid in calculating and forecasting the annual financial plan or budget. The calculated income would be reported as a separate revenue line item in the budget. Examining the periodicity of CDs as an insurance policy against declining stock prices, a slowing economy, and lowering projected short-term CD rates should be a frequent and ongoing process. In conjunction with the management of investments, the amount of the required reserves should be analyzed in order to quantify the amount of recommended reserves. The annual auditors can make recommendations based on the value and anticipated life of the capital equipment and structure. This provides the district with a target reserve based on development of the above. Additionally, it gives a look into the value based on cost life projections, enabling best decisions for having maintenance structure and making repairs and replacements. It's worth stating, though, that the income earned this year on the reserves in our very short-term LAIF investment, which is an agency fund for governments usually, was the equivalent of a 5.3% rate increase or $225,000 versus $210,000 in revenue that the proposed 5% rate increase would have generated. In the last 2 years, a total of $377,000 has been added to the district's coffers through interest earned through the LAIF, the Local Agency Investment Fund. Also worth stating, if we had most of the reserves invested in a portfolio of CDs with laddered maturity dates from 1 to 10 years, we could have locked in higher rates instead of being at the mercy of the marketplace, where we have been dropping daily over the last several months and are continuing to do so in a current pause at the moment. The Board of Directors adopted the original investment policy guidelines 24 years ago with two subsequent amendments in 2009 and 2017. I have the document here, but
2017 or 2007?
2007.
Okay.
Thank you. But you mentioned one in 2016, so I'm not sure what that was. But anyway, there needs to be at least one more amendment because the Federal Reserve Deposit Insurance Corporation has increased the FDIC insurance in the aggregate per institution, and it's currently at 250,000. And in our document, it has 100,000. So that needs to be updated. The FDIC recommends and is in commonplace to have the financial institution where any deposits we would make for the CDs be collateralized by the institution. Otherwise, it would be difficult to locate and manage 36 separately held banks with $250,000 invested in each to fully cover the $9 million by the FDIC insurance. Finally, the horse is halfway out of the barn, but if we marshal our resources with a deliberate, intentional, and focused effort and get a plan in place, we can still benefit from a portfolio of CDs with varying maturities before the window completely closes, and we would be then in a great position before the next business cycle to capitalize on the full change in market trend and lock in higher rates. And so you could see that not only do we need to act quickly at present, but we also need to stay active henceforth to drive the most return on our district investments.
Wow.
So something to look at. It takes some effort up front, but a couple of hundred thousand accumulation, and as rates go down now, we may not be able to get the highest rate, but if you lock it in, you could count on that guaranteed rate of return. And in that 7-year dry spell where we were only bringing in 30 to 40 to 50,000, we could get 150 to 250,000, even if rates don't go much over 2% like where they've been. But at 1.5 right now, or 2, or 1.75, we still have some time to act, but it would take somebody to take the bull by the horns. And
so a couple of comments just for me. One, so we did a update in 2016. I have a document right here.
Yeah.
So. We already did the 250 to 100. That change was made in the document, and okay. I'll show you the minutes. So that's done.
Okay.
And then also too, I mean, from my perspective, certainly thinking that CDs should be a part of our investment portfolio. So as you may have discovered, the public agency investing is governed by state law. There's section 53 600, which says what we can pretty much invest in. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we can actually go outside. We pretty much can go to 5 years or less. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can go to 10 years mm-hmm. on CDs. And then obviously, as you pointed out, the importance of it's safety principle, liquidity, market return, those are the three priorities that we have to basically focus on first. Mm-hmm. And obviously CDs are not exactly liquid, especially if you go out further. And so, you know, one of the things that I've seen in my work and other, what I recommend other agencies do, is you have two basically portfolios. You have your cash portfolio of where that's your cash to maintain all your liquidity needs, and then you allocate some money, you know, for maybe more longer term investing to, you know, like a CD, for example. So obviously that's the type of work that needs to be done. First, we just need a policy, though, and an updated just policy that allows us, because ours is, you can see it's pretty basic right now. So a policy update, and then of course there's work on staff side to, you know, what can we actually do, what are our numbers, kind of do these cash balance projections to what's actually investable, that's a word, what can we invest long term. So but yeah, glad you guys pointed out the 250. We've taken care of that one, and I think it makes sense that having at least some of our investments in CDs to you know, get some higher rate of return than what we're getting on selected things. So, thank you.
I just want to add the public agency that the money's currently with, they do have those CDs, but it's only available to lending institutions and banks. And like you said, the CDs are on the list of authorized investment vehicles. And the LAIF is still an option, along with the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years in maturities. And if they, as they mature, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 each year, a whole bunch of them could be liquidated, enrolled, or kept put in the short term, very short term.
Mitch, this is a really good, thorough report. Thank you for taking the time to put it together and think it through and provide some, not only data in here, but some options for consideration. It would behoove us as a board to think about putting this on an agenda for a future discussion so that we can talk about doing policy updates and cash balance projections, and then we'll take a look at this. So I would definitely want to suggest that we do that, and that work can be done by the board directing its finance committee to do that work, you know, at some point in time.
Steve, you have an investment policy update scheduled.
Right? Yes, we're working on that. Yeah, at least that's one step in this.
Okay. Great.
Just to add, just the other thing we also talked about with the general manager during this discussion as well was we also have the ability to work with our financial consultants, so it's not just us, you know. Plus, there is the things also you mentioned as percentage, which percentage do we invest, and all of that, and the principles we use as a public agency.
Be a good
right.
board discussion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, thank you, Mitch. This was very good.
Thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to new business, item 7A, approve a professional services agreement with the design, installation, and monitoring of screen gauges.
So screen gauging, this is part of Senate Bill 88. In 2015 that came out, and we have it partially gauged now. We have four above Stumpy Meadows, the level, the flow into our diversion, and the flow below our diversion to meet the state requirement. The state's requiring every water right that we have has a stream gauge associated with it that we track hourly and record that and save that. We put this proposal out beginning of September to get some bids. We received one. My thought is it's pretty unique, you're remote, and a lot of contractors do this kind of work. We have worked with this this consultant before. They're currently doing our maintenance on our gauges now. They go out every month. There's another requirement. They go out and verify that they do a manual reading to make sure that the telemetry is correct, so the reads we get are accurate. So they proposed to do the bid to do the work. It's pretty straightforward. You know, we have these additional water right areas that we need to monitor as part of Senate Bill 88, and this is the contract they bid to do them. So we're bringing it forward to move forward with it so we can be in compliance.
Okay. More questions?
I just have one. Was there any down the road, are we going to look at putting a gauging into the irrigation system at all? Because that was down the line, we're going to have that's going to be one of our water loss.
So that was part of the capital acquisition. We actually have the two flumes that were in there. They're on order, and they take a couple months to get. So those are coming, yeah. So if we're going to have them in place before the next irrigation season starts. Even though they're on the main canal, but it's going to really help us out to figure out, you know, where everything's going, where we're losing. But yeah, that's in the works. Yeah. And those are manual. Those aren't standard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are those required by the state?
There's not a direct line that you need these, but we do report water loss. And as for us to report more accurate readings, they'll be definitely beneficial to, you know, understand what the ditch is doing, and what it's losing, what it's gaining.
Garcia, do you have some questions? So.
Nope.
Okay.
Adam just answered it.
My only question is just more of a clarification on the CEQA assessment part of the report. It says it has not been performed. It appears the project is categorically exempt. I guess I'm just concerned that, you know, obviously we don't get too far ahead and realize, oops, we have to do CEQA and going back. So can you just speak to that?
So I talked to the contractor who's done a lot of these gauges, and that was his experience with doing these. That's the exemption they have used, and he's been successful with that. So that's kind of like, that's the approach we're taking with it right now. Because he's done multiple, you know, PCW, EID.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's fine.
Gauging's a good thing.
It
gives you more data.
Yeah.
I agree it's a good thing. I just want to make sure we're not going too far down with, and then, oops, we have to go back and do CEQA, and how much more does that cost? And
it's definitely a valid concern, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. And how he designed The gauges is actually not really stream channel or stream channel, ditch channel modification. It's kind of, we have our existing structures there, so we're just kind of attaching to those structures that are already there.
Will those gauges, Adam, eventually be tagged to a telemetry system?
Yes, they will be, yeah. They'll all be tied into a PQL system we have that tells us our tank height, our existing gauges now.
Okay.
They'll all be tied together.
Great. And did you by any chance look into or have you thought about using the GO satellite system, which is free for telemetry?
I have not, no.
Then talk about that. I'll tell you what we did on the State Water Project. And there's time on satellites, it's free. And if you've got the monitors that will do it, then you get free telemetry. You don't have to pay for modems. Yeah, we can talk about the GO satellite system because it's free.
Thanks.
Pretty straightforward. Any other board questions? Any public comment on this item?
I just have stuff to bring up with the funding, just to remind us. So I had some questions for Steve based on our CIQ. With the treated water line replacement, would that cover paving, the Cagliano bit?
Yeah, whatever they've done. So there's no, they're all within scope.
Okay. Yeah. And that was pretty much it. So just from the papers I gave everybody, we're currently with this project, even though it's under what the expected cost for this to be was $208,460, and it's $189,943, so $152 with the gauging plus the $35,000 for maintenance. That'll put us around $480,000 over our 5-year CIP projected budget. So that's assuming we don't get the water grant. If we get the water grant, we will still be fine. So just moving forward, we have to just keep in mind that we need to get the reserve CIP to make sure that we're not going to be overextended, because the CIP budget is reflective of our rates, so revenue coming into that.
I have a question now, because my understanding or my recollection is that we approved basically a budget amendment to fund that project at the amount.
Yes.
So the way I've done it in the past with capital budgets is that obviously you show an adopted budget, mm-hmm. your CIP, but then you're going to show you should show an amended budget, mm-hmm. which basically shows, so really we're not. We've approved all the funding for this.
Yes, you approved all the funding for it. So the step now is to amend the CIP budget to show that approval of the...
Right. I just want to clarify that we're not over budget. We've approved funding for this.
The way I would phrase it is your expenditures are now tracking higher than that originally approved CIP.
Correct.
So we have
to
now you're
readjusting.
So
make sure
typically you do every year.
Right.
Every year we're going to do the 5 years. That's why it's so important to update that 5 year CIP every year, because a lot of agencies get in trouble, they don't update it every year. And then so you don't catch these things when things go over or under, and you get a true up. So we want to true up every year and make sure we're adjusting that needle.
I think actually I agree with you on that, but also too to keep track of your yearly capital improvement budget. Because I used to make capital improvement budget amendments all the time in the system. And I guess then my next question would be, why did you not include that in your spreadsheet?
Which one?
The fact that we approved whatever the balance of 840 minus 345 is from the last meeting.
It's in there. That's under...
estimated actual.
Yeah.
Right. But how come it's not in the revenues? Why didn't you not include the amended budget for 5-year CIP?
Because we haven't seen an amended budget yet.
Yeah.
We approved it, though.
But it's not updated yet, so
it's
that's
not
what
updated.
I'm saying. Until it's updated, I'm just saying this is where we're at now.
I think we just have to disagree on this. I think it's a little disingenuous, though. Everyone knows that we approved the balance. That the last part of the action was to approve the money to cover that. So it's not, that project's being funded to the level of the actual. We're not going to be over budget by, whatever that is, $500,000.
Once we find out where the funding is coming from, as of now.
Yep. I'm pretty sure how we identified the funding.
I provided the plan for funding.
Thank
yes.
you. That's right.
So.
Okay. All right. Additional comments on this? Or actually, we can go to public comments. Public comments on this item? Seeing none. Let's entertain a motion to to do what the board would like to do on this. Recommended action is to adopt the attached resolution and execute the contract for $189,343.
I'll make a motion that we approve the board's recommendation.
Second.
All right. Motion and a second. Kelly, when you're ready.
Is that Director Souza?
Yes.
Oh, no. Okay. Director Garcia?
Aye.
Director Halpin?
Aye.
Director Saunders?
Aye.
Director Souza?
Aye.
And Director Wadley?
Aye. Thank you. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
Okay. Item 7B, updated leakage consideration policy. Christina, take it away.
All right. So back in the, I have not been able to find a 1980s leakage consideration policy, although this is what the previous policy stated. But back in 2010, there was a memo that was put in place for a leakage consideration policy that is, it's not very straightforward. There's a lot of gray area. So in updating all of our policies, this is one of the ones that we found was kind of important for not only staff, but for the customers to kind of have clear-cut direction. Currently, customers get one leakage consideration every 10 years, unless they have a leak that is larger than their original leak, they can buy that one back and then get the larger leak forgiven as well. Currently, they're getting a reduction of $2.25 per 1,000 cubic feet. It goes up 5 cents every year. So basically, we kind of took what our current consideration was and compared it with a few different agencies that are here in California. It was sort of difficult to find a large number of policies to compare it to because there aren't very many agencies that allow for leakage consideration in California. I also did a comparison of, at the request of the Finance Committee, of the leakage considerations we've done in 2018 and 2019 to kind of tell the volume in the leaks that are happening, the amounts that are being forgiven for each customer. And it seems as though they kind of went down in 2018 and then they've gone back up in 2019. So there's two policies in here. There's a policy that I proposed to the board, to the Finance Committee based on the research that I did. And then there's also a policy in here with their recommendations of having a cap as well as giving the customers a little bit more of forgiveness on their leaks that they have. In 2019, as of about a month ago, which there's been more since then, we've had 51 leakage considerations with a total of 1,893,536 cubic feet that's been lost. With a revenue loss of $43,223. Where at the end of 2018, there was a total of 60 leakage considerations with a loss of 1,039,737 cubic feet. And that was a loss of $22,831 of water sales revenue. So it's kind of fluctuates from year to year, but it did seem like this year was significantly larger than the year before. So I don't know if there's any questions.
Okay. Board questions?
So in those two, you know, the 1 year it was $20,000, next year was $40,000. Did we forgive that amount in each of those years?
We basically lost that revenue, yes. So it was revenue that the district should have earned, but we
Forgave it because it was a leap in both years. And we've been doing that for how long?
It says since the 1980s, but myself, Steve, other staff members have tried to find something from back in the 80s. I don't see anything as far as an actual policy, ordinance, resolution, anything from back then. All I can find is from 2010, an actual, there's a memo that has a policy, so.
So we could, I mean, for my own edification, I'm just, we could assume we've been forgiving leaks for some period of time, even though there's not documentation. It's been a standard practice for a long time.
Yes.
Even without the documentation.
Correct.
And the documentation that you do have that for the past 2 years, it was about 20,000 one year and 40,000 the next.
Yes.
I'm just trying to reiterate what you said from my own understanding.
Yes.
Let's go. Let me do the board here first. So, did you have a question? Not right now, Saunders.
And then I provided a little chart that from the finance committee that Thomas Crawford had, which shows what the revenue lost to the district would be for each one based on no cap, the current no cap at 50%, which is what is the staff's recommendation. And you could go down to the 1,000% and 70% revenue. That's the one that the finance committee recommended. So you can see the amount that would be returned in revenue.
Okay, so that was my question. Is this is revenue that, when you say returned to
this is the
district.
One that'll be lost. Right, so 43K is lost with no cap current. And if we did no cap 50%, then it would be 24.1 is lost. So we would, what is that? 18,000 would be given back to the district.
Right, whereas, so that's reason returned to the district.
Right, whereas you go down to the 1,000, then it's, we only have 19.8K. This is loss. That's loss.
You're just using this current year of $43,000 by way of comparison.
Correct.
Well, and that's, yeah, that scenario. So there's the 51 leakage considerations. That's what you use to calculate this.
Mm-hmm.
Or Thomas, right? Thomas.
I just wanted to corroborate what Christina said, because in 1987, when they were building my house, mm-hmm. they nicked a pipe. And I got the bill, and it was exactly what you said, the same thing that was basically invoked in the 2010. So it hasn't changed much over that course of time.
My question, I have two. The first is I just want to understand staff's recommendation at the Finance Committee. Excuse me. So the 50% savings, one leakage every 3 years. I agree that the 3 years, the 10 years doesn't make sense. So that needs to be changed. So I understand that, and it seems to be consistent with the other policies that you, Solano and Burnham and Groveland. So why, just explain to me your guys' thought process on the 50% savings and no cap on the credit.
I was kind of iffy on the cap, that's why I brought it to them and asked them, okay, well, this is something that I am seeing. Is this something that maybe we should do? I want a direction on, okay, if we're going to have a cap, what should the cap be? Should we have a cap? Should we not? It's the cap, I think, for me, we don't have a large amount of gross users, but I think it is important for the ones that, I mean, this year alone, we had one leakage consideration that was $12,000. So that's kind of, that's where the cap would be important, because that's a pretty big leak, and we're coming into the next year where the state's going to be putting limitations on, you know, how much water can be used per mm-hmm. household. So on that kind of stuff, I think that it's, it's important, because then people are going to be really, if there is a cap, that's a large loss.
Right.
And okay. So maybe they might be more diligent to make sure that it gets fixed promptly. This also does state that it has to be brought to us in the billing period that the leak you know, occurred in not bringing it to us. You know, we have had situations where people are coming to us 2-3 billing cycles down the road. Oh, I had a leak 2 billing cycles ago. Can I have a consideration? So it's really important to find it promptly and get it to us for your adjustment promptly, especially, you know, when it's going across fiscal years. For me, it's important because right. It kind of messes with our revenue numbers.
Okay.
But the cap, I think, is important for those ones that are, and that's why they chose the amount that they did for the $1,000. We didn't have a large number of, I think we had made two or three that saved more than $1,000.
Okay, kind of the big leaks.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the cap would, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Again, I'm just trying to understand this. We have a very limited number of these catastrophic leaks.
Mm-hmm.
And the cap would only apply to the catastrophic leaks.
Well, it would.
No?
It would be for all of them, but you don't have a lot of people who are
cap.
Yes, that was the thing, is you don't have a lot.
The cap is set at such a weird point that the, and I'm just articulating this, I'm trying to understand it, you're establishing an arbitrary cap that you think is going to capture the vast majority of the leaks,
mm-hmm.
based on your historical data.
Yes.
But there will be some number based on your historical of these $12,000 cataclysms, and the cap will then not will affect them.
Correct.
Is that?
Because you have those customer. I mean, these ones are. This is 554,000 cubic feet. That's a lot of water.
No, I understand that. But catastrophic problems. I guess my concern is. You know, if some individual has this bad luck, mm-hmm. and I don't know what that, you know, for whatever the reason, he shows up with a $12,000 bill, there's probably people sitting in this room, myself included, that's troublesome. That's hugely troublesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there's probably some people, that's bankruptcy troublesome. It's not bankruptcy troublesome for GPUD. And it certainly hasn't been bankruptcy troublesome for GPUD for the last 50 years. And so I guess my sense is we're putting a cap on that it's going to, would only apply to if I've got this right, correct me if I'm wrong, a very small number of instances that would be catastrophic. And we're putting it, and we're walking away from that liability or responsibility and putting it on the customer. Is that? I mean, my inclination is, if that isn't the case, would we say no? Don't do that. I mean, if we had lots of $12,000 bills coming in all the time and multiple times from the same person, I'd have a very different attitude. But I can just see people sitting in this room, if they showed up with a $12,000 water bill, they happen to have been on vacation or whatever, based on our 50 years of experience, it's not bankrupting us and it's not a huge ongoing problem. I would be inclined to bear this trouble with our customers, as we have for the past 50 years, as opposed to come up with what I would perceive as a trivial amount of money for an agency this big that could be catastrophic for an individual. I mean, I'm just my own. I'm just kind of expressing my thinking on this.
I agree, and for a customer who's had 2 phone calls from the district, Christine called me last month and said, guys are reading your meter, it's ticking away, we think you might have a leak, and I appreciate you calling. And the district called 6 years ago when I had a leak, caught it right away. So the district does their due diligence to notify customers as quickly as you can, and we all appreciate that. And you saved me a lot of money because of that. And I was very grateful for the leak a few years ago. In the South Orchard, a whole 10-foot section of pipe just slid down, and on both risers, it just was leaking. And then I had a stuck sprinkler valve that was running constantly. So that was an expensive bill that the district took into consideration the Decembers for me and averaged them, and they came out with a reasonable amount of bill I was willing to pay. So kudos to the department for looking into this and being so diligent to notify the customers, because we greatly appreciate that. That being said, I think having the cap on is an extra added benefit to staff notifying customers that you may have a problem, because then it helps our customers in the long run not pay these extravagant, you know, $12,000.
You're saying not having or having?
If we have a cap on, I'm looking at the Finance Committee's recommendation of this cap of $1,000. Mm-hmm. We cap that at $1,000, and Christina, please correct me if I'm misunderstanding this. If I had a leak and that cap was in place and my leak a total amount exceeded that cap amount, my leakage rate that I would pay, that bill that I would pay, would be based on that $1,000 cap.
No.
You're only saving
$12,000 bill.
You're going to pay $11,000 out of the $12,000 bill.
Okay.
Get,
so you only get $1,000. I see.
30%.
Okay. Thank you.
$1,000 to pay.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dave, you're suggesting then that no cap, bearing the burden.
What I'm suggesting is that the forgiveness policy in these catastrophic instances, seems to me that would be something that I would support that. That
no
we,
cap.
Yeah, I'm supporting no. I'm not saying this, but I would be supporting no cap, and I'm basing that on the fact that very seldom does it happen.
Right.
It could be catastrophic. It's not going to have a catastrophic impact on this district, mm-hmm. but for an individual in our, we don't live in a very affluent neighborhood.
Right, and, yeah.
$12,000 water bills would be...
Devastating. Absolutely.
And we don't have a long history of a whole bunch of people doing this on a regular basis repeatedly. We have 50 years of this. I mean, it's pretty generous,
right.
but... It's easy for me to be generous with other people's money, I get it. But that's my inclination.
Let me go to Steve real quick, because I'd like to...
Just to enlighten you about the conversation, and to Christina's point, I think there were four people that would have exceeded that over the entire length of her study. And for the amount of water that they basically lost, they may have come in with a $12,000 bill, but they'd have been about... half deep in wet pants too, to not have noticed it. And what we were really trying to do is say, look, this isn't a major problem, and quite frankly, they can appeal it. You know, the board can take a look at it and say, well, yeah, you know, gee, it was on the back 40 and it was, you know, blah, 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 and there was good reason for it, so we're gonna forgive it. But it builds awareness, and it really focuses the customer a little bit on having a stake in the game. And so, you know, like I said, I mean, we could have measured one of them, I think, in acre feet if we wanted to. I mean, it was huge.
Nice.
So we just said, you know, we can't just let people say, oh, yeah, I'll deal with that next Tuesday. You know, they're going to deal with it now. So that was our rationale, and we went through all the data, and that's what we found.
Does the policy, to that point, does the policy here allow the board's discretion?
Appeal it. Even now, they could appeal it to the board. To your comment about on vacation, the one thing that I did see over and over again in these other policies is that if somebody is on vacation or it's a vacation home, mm-hmm. they wouldn't qualify for a leakage consideration. So that was something that I didn't put in here, because we do have a lot of people who do have, you know, vacation homes or homes that they aren't here certain times of the year, but that was something in the other policies that they wouldn't even qualify. If it's a second home, vacation home, if it's, you know, you left for the weekend and left your, you know, you'd have to call a neighbor. And that was something that with Cindy, I called her and she said, I'm going to have my neighbor go and look at it. Mm-hmm. So it is something that we do have to make sure that people are, if you're going on vacation, turn your water off at the gate valve. Or we have to, you know, on that, in that kind of a sense, they have to be responsible and not having it.
And because
going.
Of that phone call, remember my first question to you? What time is it?
What time, yeah.
9 o'clock. Front orchard irrigation was on, and that's what it turned out to be. So yeah. 20 minutes later, it kicked off. So, but mm-hmm. when it's clicking on and then we're watering 40 trees, yeah, it could look like a leak if you're down at the meter and it's ticking away. So thank you very much, and kudos to that because we checked it out. And actually, because of that, Christina, we did find a leak. We found a leak in one of the new irrigation valves that's irrigating the west side driveway landscaping. And it just was just barely going around. So there is a slow leak in the brand new sprinkler valve that I put in that now I'm going to have to replace. So it's not wasted time. So I appreciate your effort again.
Can I go to Tom real quick? Because I know he has his hand up in, as a finance committee and looks like you worked on some of this.
I just wanted to say that a half million cubic feet fills six Olympic pools. It's a lot of damn water.
Yeah.
I mean, and while I appreciate that comment, I can't imagine if someone was knee-deep in water, they wouldn't think to do something. So, in their defense, they're not knee-deep in water. Something's going on. I mean, any reasonable person who was knee-deep in water would say, holy crap, I need to do something. It doesn't happen for some reason. Do you see what I'm trying to say? I mean, it's easy to assume that they're just... You could say something bad about them. I'm going to assume the best about them. And they weren't knee-deep in water. They weren't aware of the fact that they were cranking out $12,000 worth of water. That's my, you know, response to that.
Like you have something? Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I mean, the same thing saying, I mean, if there's four people that are large, but I also agree with Dave in putting a cap penalizing everybody because there's a couple, I mean... So if you're at 2,000 or 3,000, I mean, that 3,000 to you, that extra 2,000 could be catastrophic to you because you don't have that. So the cap, when we're looking at the big ones, yeah, we know that's, you know, that's bad. But if you're just over by 2,000 or 3,000, you're going to get penalized as well.
But again, at the same time, you can, and the policy says you can, anyone can appeal this to the board. So you guys are making a determination. If they don't like it, they're going to come to the board.
That would be hopefully if they know that. If we got a bill for $2,000, now I'm on the board. I know to appeal it, but I would be paying it. That's
I'm on automatic pay, Sam. Yeah.
That, yes.
Well, but it's within the billing period, though. Yeah, that's right. Well, you have to do something in the bill.
But we also have hardships.
They have the hardship stuff.
So yeah. Anybody who has a larger bill like that, it's especially with the SB 998, it's they're going to be able to make payments on that large bill. So if in the event that one of these large people didn't or couldn't pay their bill, they would have the ability to do a hardship and make payments.
Sorry, I know I'm just not thinking about it today for some reason. So someone explained to me the $1,000 cap. So if you come in, you have a leak, you have $12,000, then they can only pay $1,000.
Okay, so
no,
it's
they
based...
They can only get refunded $1,000. Okay.
And
they owe $12,000, they only get refunded a credit for $1,000.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Question?
And that's not 100%. That's based on your
And it's
previous.
Based on your usage. Mm-hmm. So if they're usually, like, say they usually spend $2,000 on their water in a month, that wouldn't be a part of the forgiveness.
Right.
So that's kind of where the calculation sheet comes in. So, it would all depend as well on their prior usage.
Yeah, I really don't like the cap. I think we should get rid of 1118.3 and 1118.3.4. It's on the second page, on the very top.
I know there's two.
Which one are we talking about? So my original one...
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
why do I have two?
Well that one's the cap. So then
yeah, there's
the two issues are... So there's the one issue is cap or no cap, and then the second issue is percentage or no percentage.
But they're both...
Well, you have to have a percentage.
They look extremely similar.
Yeah,
yeah, I can't tell one from the other.
Okay, so one of them... 3.3 and 3.4 are different. That's the only difference in each one. So 118, 3.3, on the finance committee recommended is that they get, that they're responsible for 30% of the water loss. So that means they get a 70% forgiveness. And there's a cap of the $1,000. On mine is that they're responsible for 50% of the water lost, and there is no cap. So that's the difference between the two.
So to try to, again, I'm just trying to articulate this because it's a little bit confusing. On a $12,000 bill, in your case, there's no cap, but they're going to get a $6,000 bill.
Correct.
And on the finance committee, on the $12,000 bill, they're going to get an $11,000 bill plus 70% of the first seven.
300.
So they're going to get an $11,300 bill in the finance committee version. And on your version, they're going to get a $6,000 bill.
Correct.
You guys are some harsh devils.
No, that's backwards.
Okay, well, whatever.
It's not
backwards. And one way it's $6,000, the other way it's $11,000.
On the finance committee, there's a $1,000 cap.
Oh, for the cap, yeah.
So. $11,300 versus $6,000.
$6,000.
Yeah. Obviously, you've mentioned that you can't even find another water district as generous as us. So, I mean, I don't think it's, I think you could argue it's outrageous that we're being so generous with other people's money. And I get that. But we've only been doing it for 50 years. And, you know, coming up with another board action that's, you know, I guess I can only speak for myself.
Yeah, so I like the staff recommendation, and what happens is, looking forward, this is something that we can readdress, because as we start calculating what our given water budget is, because that's what's going to be coming down the line, the state is going to give us what they believe our water budget should be. But it doesn't look like it depends on what our leakage loss is compared to that, if it's impacting that.
I mean, independent of what the state does, no cap, we eat it.
Yeah.
The cap, the customer eats it. Mm-hmm. I think if you get to that bottom line.
Well, is there something that we want to look at, maybe adjusting the recommendation of the cap? Or are people not? Because I actually think of... I think the cap has some merit, and the reason I like that is, again, I think it is important, as you said, the customers have skin in the game. But at the end of the day, there is an appeal process to the board, which has to be within 40 days, right? On something. So I don't know. I think with the finance committee on this one, yeah. Like, and maybe it's not $1,000. Maybe it's a little bit higher. Or maybe it's a little bit higher cap, or you adjust the savings. Understand that there is an appeal. It's just, that makes, it's making some sense in my head to address the issue of what you're talking about. I mean, what we currently are, but having the customers have some skin in the game, but being more accommodating, and then again, ultimately, the board's going to have, if they issue, the board's going to hear this appeal regardless.
I understand what you're saying. I would not want to have a 40-day restriction on my ability to make an adjustment if I'm going to give myself the luxury. If I was going to move forward with either one of these two, which I'm somewhat disinclined to do, but if I was going to do that, I don't want to then find myself in a situation where I've timed out my ability to make an adjustment. If I'm going to go there, I want to reserve my right to make the adjustment, and if the poor devil shows up in the 41st day for whatever the reason, I don't want to be able to say, oh, damn, I can't make the adjustment I was hoping to make, even though I'm not a cap kind of guy.
Well, I think there has to be some, you have to put an appeal at some point.
Can I clarify that? Can I clarify that for you?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So they have 10 days from the day that that we give them a response as to what their leakage consideration is going to be. So you provide me with all of your documentation, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. it goes to Steve for approval, right? And so and we do all of our calculations. Your bill is now $11,000. Then we're going to send you a letter, and that letter is going to say, this is what you save. You then have 10 days to then contact Steve and say, Steve, I want this to go to the board. Steve has 40 days to get it to you guys to make a decision.
Okay. Yeah. He couldn't be, you know, in his vacation room and come back on the 41st day and go, oops.
No. So we're staying in constant communication with our customers when there's a leak as far as this is what your savings. And some people, we'll call them and say, hey, you're really either you. We should probably try and see if it extended over two billing cycles, or you're not really saving a lot. Do you want to save this for your next really, for a big leak? We try and stay in communication with them for all of that. We'll even call them and tell them, hey, this is what your bill is going to be, but you're also getting a letter in the mail. So
I get it. And I appreciate your policy, the finance committee's policy, and all these thinking. I'm just a no-cap kind of guy.
This doesn't even apply to irrigation, right?
No irrigation.
No, because irrigation.
So if you have a leak like you're talking about and it's not irrigation?
Yeah, I mean, that's big, and that's why I could see Dane doing the cap. But also remember, there's not that many people that reach that stage, so.
It's going to be hard to have that much water on your property.
They were businesses. It was a business, she said.
Whatever it is, I mean, it's hard to create such a fiasco.
Yeah.
So what do you think of increasing?
We go to public comment on this question. Go ahead.
Sure.
Actually, the difference between 2018 and 2019 are those two businesses that were $23,000. There's where your difference. Normally, it's $27,000 a year. But we only have 2 years' worth. And then if you look down the 90% column, there's hardly anybody that went over even 1,000.
And that was the recommendation why they chose that number.
But if you're going to do this, you got to send out this leak policy and let customers know, because this directly affects what they do. It's not like a regular policy. It's something that they've got to be involved in. So once you get it done, it needs to be mailed out or emailed or whatever.
Sure.
I would recommend it.
Okay, Karen?
I kind of don't agree with the cap because I think you can only file a water leakage once every 3 years or 10 years or whatever you make it. And for the first offense, I would think that I would like to not see a cap. That makes everybody very aware of what's going on. And then if it's a second time where it's $12,000 bill, you know, they're not paying attention or whatever, I could see maybe putting a cap on it, but nobody wants a water leak, you know, and it's happened, I'm sure, to everybody in this room. We've all had water leaks. A lot of us don't turn it in because we catch it earlier, but some people, especially older people, might not catch it, might not be able to see it until it bubbles up and it's been pretty expensive, but I would hate to see a cap put on.
I think I could say, you know, I'm a no cap guy. I could be a cap guy for a second offender.
Me too. And customers' pipes are getting old, just like the G-Pets pipes.
It's also animals, too. My horse usually likes to play with the horse trough and take out the pipe and then come home and see the guys are like,
So that occurred
there.
Yeah,
second.
Like playing with the horse.
Yeah. Well, that's not to say that the cap has to be a fixed amount. Depending on volume, the cap could be a percentage or a sliding amount.
Mm-hmm. On a second offense, you could make that cap his owner if he's wrong.
I mean,
if he shows up a second time with $12,000, I'm going to have very little patience. First time around, you know, call me a bleeding heart, I can't take it. Second time, I could get real harsh in a hurry.
He could sell tickets to the geyser for the guy that's got a $12,000.
Yeah, I like that idea as well, too.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
If you
maybe on a certain.
And no cap on the on first, the first one, and then they would.
You know, maybe you could come to ALT and talk about their speeding ticket policy.
Wouldn't buy an ALT, I'm sorry.
Can't be either.
Okay.
You wouldn't be able to.
It popped into my head, and I